We're here in Council Bluffs today for the Trump rally that will take place this evening here. President Trump is expected to talk quite a bit about his E-15 announcement, his approval of E-15 year-round. We're going to talk right now with Jan Tenbensel from Cambridge, Nebraska, who is chairman of the Nebraska Ethanol Board, and Scott McPheeters from Gothenburg, who is vice chairman of the Nebraska Ethanol Board. Gentlemen, you're here to listen to what the president has to say here, and I know this is something the industry's worked on for a long time, so you got to be pretty happy with what's happening today.
Oh, absolutely. E15 is a huge economic boom for the Midwest. It's not going to be an instantaneous effect. However, even in the short term and the medium term, the ability to use higher blends of ethanol at home in our own states and our own vehicles is really going to be able to move some more corn off these huge piles of surplus we have now. But the important thing to remember is this isn't all a federal thing. This has to be handled yourself. You have to help yourself. You ask your retailers for higher blends. Use higher blends yourself. If you have to, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, because nobody's going to fix this for us. The president's going to help, but we have to do the work.
So how big is this, Scott? I mean, you've got some people out there saying, well, you know, it's not really that significant. How big do you think it could be?
Well, if we use 140 billion gallons of gasoline in this country and we approximately produce 14 to 15 billion gallons of ethanol, so we would have to have an additional 7 billion gallons to saturate the E15 market. So it's really more than we can do right now. We'd have to ramp up, and things would be kind of like the old days where we just needed to build out and supply the market.
We saw what the ethanol expansion did several years ago for the industry and for corn prices. Are we talking about anything close to that here with E15?
Well, like we say, this is a longer-term process. E15 is where E10 was 40 years ago. And if we think about the money we've spent on foreign oil over the last 40 years, the money we've spent on foreign conflicts and keeping the oil transport lanes open over the last 40 years, we think about how much has been put into just having E10, which is now the 98% of the fuel in the United States, is so normalized. Well, this is the step that E10 was at 40 years ago. And I think we've learned from the lessons in the past, and E15 will move forward much faster than E10 did, because now it's a proven fuel. Any car that can handle E10, any car built after 2001 by the EPA can handle E15 without any problem. Nebraska right now is doing a fleet study on E30 in the state vehicles. Higher blends of ethanol do work in your vehicle, and there's a lot of data to prove that, and it's just a matter of getting all the data points, the studies finished, to move that forward.
Talk about that a little bit, Scott. The ethanol board's worked on that project with the state of Nebraska. So as we look at E30, I mean, is there a possibility that we go from E15 to a higher blend at some point?
People are used to E10 at this point, and they're becoming more comfortable all the time with E15. And every vehicle manufactured since 2001 is approved by the EPA to use E15. So what about E30? And, of course, the Nebraska demonstration is hoping to make people comfortable with the fact that, as Jan mentioned, we were – in 1974, we were at this place with E10, where people were unsure, and so this will give them a high level of comfort, and we'll collect the data and be able to prove that those vehicles are capable of burning E30, the legacy vehicles that are non-flex fuel.
So, Jan, with the summertime restrictions on E15, yeah, I think you had a lot of retailers just didn't want to mess with it, right? So does this really open the door for more usage, more retailers offering the product?
Well, it does, Ken. The problem with the summertime restrictions, it costs these retailers a lot of money to switch back and forth. There's some concern about if something is restricted, is there any misfueling? There's signage difference, there's labeling differences. It becomes quite a headache, and when you're running a business, sometimes less headache is much easier to deal with.
Okay, so back to the beginning, guys. You're talking about unused capacity in Nebraska. I mean, how much of that is unused, and what's the potential to get those plants producing at 100%?
The current production in Nebraska is 2.2 billion gallons, I believe was last year's production. We have about 2.6, 2.7 billion gallons of capacity, so roughly a half a billion gallons of unused capacity in Nebraska. Now, with some minor debottlenecking, you could probably jump that figure by a couple hundred million gallons. That's pure speculation on my part, but you know, Nebraska could easily, with not much effort, add 700 million gallons to their current production, and with a couple new plants, go up to a billion gallons in additional, which would take about 300 million bushels of corn out of the state.
And that's what we're talking about. You guys are both corn growers. We're talking about more demand for corn and something we could sorely use right now.
Sure. And of course, we need all the markets for the corn. About a third of our corn in the nation goes to make ethanol, and then a third of that corn comes back as cattle feed. And that's why Nebraska is number one in cattle feeding now. We have water and we have room, and so the distillers grains are there. So it's been called the Golden Triangle with the ethanol, corn, and cattle. One thing I'd like to point out is that if everybody thinks about where their market was 20 years ago and where they delivered corn to and what bids they had, and now they look at where they deliver corn to and what bids they have, it's a completely different landscape. This is not going to lift corn automatically double. It's just something where we have such a burdensome surplus hanging over the market. And I don't know for sure if it's a good example or not, but that delicate balance, I liken it to going to ordering sandwiches for a party, and there's 100 people at the party and 100 sandwiches. Oh, wait, somebody didn't show up. Now we have 100 sandwiches and 99 people. We've got a terrible oversupply, and, you know, what are we going to do with it all? And or vice versa, if 101 people show up, gee, we have a shortage, and not everybody's going to get fed, and it's going to be terrible. It's such a delicate balance.
You know, as a corn grower, I mean, how excited are you by this announcement today?
Well, I'm pretty excited. We have a diversified farm. We raise corn, wheat, soybeans, peas, even different crops. The more corn acres we can have, the less wheat acres we'll have, the better for the wheat price. This is good for agriculture all around. But in closing, and I really want to say, you know, we have to do this ourselves. We have to ask our retailers for higher blends. We have to utilize the higher blends. This isn't just going to happen for agriculture. We have to go out and do it ourselves.